and the 2016 Summer Olympics begin on Friday with the opening ceremonies, and we've heard a lot about the current state of the host country, Brazil. Problems with Zika, corruption, and readiness for the Games. But we wanted to take a step back right now and talk about how Brazil became what it is, a short history of the country. Joining us now is Brody Fisher, who's a history professor at the University of Chicago and director of the Center for Latin American Studies there. Brody Fisher, thanks for joining us. And let's go back to the beginning of modern-day Brazil. When and how did the Portuguese settle there, and who did they find?
All right, so this takes us back more than 500 years to 1500, when a Portuguese semi-nobleman named Pedro Álvares Cabral tried to duplicate a voyage that had been undertaken a couple years before to India. And sort of semi-accidentally, he went a little bit too far to the west, and he came across what we now know as Brazil. He stayed for only 10 days, but he took that time to claim the entire landmass for the Portuguese crown. The problem was that although there was actually a lot in what's now Brazil, there were millions of indigenous peoples, four major language groups, plenty of resources, as we would learn later. The Portuguese actually didn't see any of that. And so for them, it was pretty much a whole lot of nothing. They didn't find the gold and silver they wanted. There was no empire to take over like there had been in, or would be in Mexico and Peru. And so they just kind of laid claim and sent some expeditions, but nothing really happened for about 50 years after that initial claim.
You mentioned the indigenous people. What happened to them? And we do know that even today, occasionally, people find tribes in the Amazon that have little or no contact with the outside world.
Absolutely. So the indigenous people of Brazil were different than the ones that were colonized by the Spanish. They were really dispersed. They were in kind of semi-nomadic villages that would stay in one place for an agricultural cycle or several and then move on someplace else. And so with the arrival of the Europeans, they were hit terribly by smallpox and other European diseases. Mortality was as high as 90% in most of the Americas. But because Brazil's landmass is so enormous and because the Portuguese really didn't get beyond the coast for several centuries, many of them just simply went further west and managed to keep on their own language, their own religion, their own traditions in the Brazilian interior for centuries after the Portuguese laid claim.
So how did the country grow? What were the major industries that developed during colonization?
So one funny story about Brazil is that its name actually comes from a commodity. There was a kind of tree in Brazil that they called pau-brasil, which had a dye that was used in European textile industries. And so the very first thing that Brazil exported were these enormous tree trunks. And then the country got its name from pau-brasil, from the name of from this tree. And that was kind of appropriate because for centuries, Brazil has depended on one commodity cycle after another. After Brazilwood, which was kind of a minor one, the first major one was sugar. Brazil was the first place in the world that brought together the kind of terrible but enormously profitable combination of European technology, sugar cane, fertile soil of Brazil, and slave labor. So by the second half of the 16th century, Brazil became the first major sugar producer in the world. And for about a century, between 1550 and 1650, Brazil's first fortunes were made on the basis of sugar and slavery. Then in the middle of the 17th century, the Dutch actually took all of those technologies to the Caribbean, and the Caribbean would overcome Brazil as a producer of sugar. And so Brazil saw its first great bust. But in the wake of that, there were these legacies that would be really important for Brazil's economic history. The first was, of course, slavery. A lot of your listeners might not know that we often think in the United States of African-American slavery as being something that was centered in our own country. But there were actually under about 400,000 Africans who were forcibly brought to what's now the United States, and almost 11 million in the Americas. And of those 11 million, 5 million went to Brazil. So Brazil is by far the largest destination for forced African labor anywhere in the world.
And how long did that last? When did slavery end in Brazil?
Brazil was the very last country in the world, in the Western Hemisphere, to eliminate slavery in 1888. And so when I've done research in my own historical work in Rio, I've actually talked to the grandchildren of slaves who remember their grandparents talking about being slaves. It's that close generationally to the present.
We're speaking with Brody Fisher, who is a history professor at the University of Chicago and director of the Center for Latin American Studies there, about Brazil and its history as we prepare for the Olympics in Rio. And Brody Fisher, I want to ask you about the huge cities that have developed in Brazil, these multi-millions of people living in Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. How did these enormous cities develop, and why did they get to be so big?
So to understand why cities grow, I have to tell you just a couple things about Brazil's history since 1500, because otherwise it won't make all that much sense. Brazil was a colony until the early 1820s, and it had a very peaceful transition to independence, much more peaceful than the United States or the rest of Latin America. And then for most of the 19th century, it was an empire that was sustained by another commodity, coffee, and by a really hierarchical social order and very concentrated resources. But in 1888, with the abolition of slavery, that empire ended, and Brazil turned for the first time to a republican system of government. And with that came all kinds of pressures to transform and modernize the Brazilian economy. It took more or less 40 years for those pressures to get strong enough that change happened very quickly. But by the time you get to the 1930s and 40s, Brazil embarked on the most ambitious program of economic development and change of any Latin American country. And in fact, by the end of the 20th century, it would have gone from a completely rural country to the largest industrial producer in Latin America. And so the growth of cities had to do with all of those processes, because like everywhere in the world, cities are understood as places of opportunity. But the kind of opportunity that Brazilian cities gave was a little bit different than what you might imagine in Detroit or Chicago or industrial England, because what people wanted were not so much industrial jobs. They also wanted citizenship, and they wanted freedom from these kind of rural power structures that had kept people under the thumb of rural bosses for centuries, and that hadn't changed all that much with slavery. And so people went to cities to find versions of freedom and citizenship and access to public resources that they could just never have in the Brazilian countryside. And the reason that all that really matters in terms of the way that cities are in Brazil is that when you have so many people coming at once to these urban areas, I mean, growth rates are sometimes, you know, 5-6% per year in these larger cities, it's almost impossible for either jobs or infrastructure to keep up with all those people. Yeah. And so what you see is people who create their own worlds. They create their own housing, Brazil's famous favelas, which start in Rio at the end of the 19th century.
And these are poor neighborhoods that often go right up the hills next to the city.
Exactly. And they started out, actually, a lot of them as kind of continuations of tenements that had existed in the old city. But very quickly, they became these places where migrants could basically live for less than they could in any part of the formal city. And at the same time, people would create informal economies. And so what you have is a city that is growing almost more quickly in its informal sectors than it is in its formal sectors. It's as if our cities had the majority of their population living as undocumented migrants, essentially.
What do outsiders misunderstand about Brazil? I have to say, I went there in 2005 or 6, and it was such a different place, even than I imagined it would be. The people, the music, the food, just the culture was so different than Argentina, for example. What do people misunderstand about Brazil?
So I think the main thing that I would say is that we often tend to understand places like Brazil through the lens of the latest emergency or crisis. And so, you know, now we hear about Zika and everyone panics, and you hear about the corruption scandal and the impeachment of the president. And you get the impression that this is a place where everyone's constantly rioting in the streets and unstable. But in fact, Brazil is one of the largest economies in the world. It's an incredible success story in terms of creating an end to the worst forms of extreme poverty that were part of the country up through the middle of the 20th century and even into the end of it. It has incredibly innovative forms of democracy and forms of legislation. Brazil's relationship with race relations is just fascinating for people in the United States because although it's a racist country and certainly race and class are correlated in all kinds of ways that you don't want, they also think about racial categories in really different ways than we do here, and relationships across races are much easier in some ways. There's just a lot of things to really love about Brazil, and especially when you get into the cultural realm with the music and the food and the language. It's a place to admire and to learn from. And so it's really a terrible shame that these Olympics, which are showcasing Brazil, are coming at such a time of crisis for the country, because the crisis is a moment, but the country is a civilization. And hopefully they'll find a way to show that to the world, despite all of the problems that everybody's hearing so much about.
That's Brody Fisher, a history professor at the University of Chicago and the director of the Center for Latin American Studies there. Brody Fisher, fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you.